Chapter 11. The Courage to Lead. Hanging in the lobby of its corporate headquarters was a huge sign that stated their just cause, helping people on their path to better health. And the company's executives believed it. They saw their company as having a purpose beyond just making money. They wanted to use their company to advance something bigger. They regularly had meetings with healthcare companies, hospitals, and physicians on how they could better work together for patients. However, near the end of many of these meetings, someone would point to the elephant in the room. "But don't you sell cigarettes in your stores?" In February 2014, CVS Caremark announced that it would stop selling any tobacco-related products in all of their over 2,800 stores. It was a decision that would cost the company $2 billion per year in lost revenue. It was a decision they chose to make, even though there was no competitive pressure to do so. There was no loud public demand that they make the decision. There was no scandal. There was no online campaign to force them to make the decision. The news was met with overwhelming support from the general public, but Wall Street and its pundits were none too pleased. "It might make money in Oz," said Jim Cramer, one of CNBC's financial commentators, "but Wall Street is not Oz. Wall Street isn't saying, you know what, I'm going to buy CVS because they're good citizens." Cramer went on, "I'm trying to figure out the earnings per share, and the earnings per share for CVS just got worse." Other outside commentators agreed and saw the decision as a boost for CVS's competitors. One Illinois-based sales and marketing consultant pointed out that the decision translated into 700 packs of cigarettes a week per store that would now be sold by some other retailer, adding that retailers know that winning the adult tobacco consumer generates incremental sales from ancillary purchases during the same visit. Looking through the lens of finite and infinite games, I can't help but see these responses to CVS's decision as exquisitely finite-minded. If the game of business was a finite game, and the future was easy to predict, the pundits would have been 100% correct. As it turns out, however, the game is infinite, and the future is quite unpredictable. In reality, that 700 packs of cigarettes per week per store didn't just go somewhere else. They went nowhere. The total sale of cigarettes actually decreased. An independent study commissioned by CVS to see the impact of their decision showed that overall cigarette sales dropped by 1% across all retailers in the states where CVS had a 15% market share or greater. In those states, the average smoker bought 5 fewer packs of cigarettes, which totaled 95 million fewer packs sold over an 8-month period. On the other hand, the number of nicotine patches sold increased by 4% in the period immediately after CVS stopped selling cigarettes, indicating that CVS's decision actually encouraged smokers to quit. As for the lost revenue, other purpose-driven companies who previously refused to do business with CVS also took notice. Companies like Irwin Naturals and New Chapter Vitamins and Supplements, whose products are available at Whole Foods and other specialty health stores, finally agreed to allow CVS to carry their products too, a move that allowed CVS to offer a greater selection of high-quality brands to their customers and open new sources of income. When a company with the stated cause of helping people live healthier lives made a courageous decision to deliver on that purpose, not only did it help make Americans a little healthier, but it also had a positive impact on overall sales at their pharmacies. Of course, there are many other factors that have contributed to CVS's stock performance. But financial health in the infinite game is, again, like exercise, impossible to measure in daily steps. It is a steady buildup that in time yields dramatic results. Jim Cramer adroitly pointed out that Wall Street isn't going to buy a company because they are good citizens, but customers and employees do, and more loyal customers and more loyal employees tend to translate into more success for the company. And the more successful a company, the more shareholders tend to benefit. Or am I missing something here? Indeed, as Cramer and other analysts predicted, CVS's stock price did fall 1% the day after the announcement, from $66.11 to $65.44 per share, only to recover the very next day. A year and a half after the announcement, and 8 months after the plan was implemented, the stock hit $113.65 per share, double what it had been before the announcement, and a record high for the company. And what of that gold standard of public company financial metrics that Jim Cramer was so worried about, the earnings per share? Prior to the announcement, in December 2013, CVS had an EPS of $1.04. After the announcement, it dropped to 95 cents. By the next quarter, it was back up to $1.06 and then rose by 70% to average $1.77 over the course of the next 3 years. Adopting an infinite mindset in a world consumed by the finite can absolutely cost a leader their job. The pressure we all face today to maintain a finite mindset is overwhelming. For most of us, almost any kind of career opportunities we have are almost all tied to how well we perform in the finite game. Add the steady drumbeat of the analyst community, pressure from private equity or venture capital firms, the tying of executive pay packages to stock performance rather than company performance, which amazingly don't always align, our egos, and the pressure many of us put on ourselves because we falsely tie our own value or self-worth to how we perform in the finite game, and any hopes that we may have to do anything other than play with a finite mindset seem completely dashed. Bowing to the pressure of the finite players around us is the easy and expedient choice. This is why it takes courage to adopt an infinite mindset. The courage to lead is a willingness to take risks for the good of an unknown future. And the risks are real, for it is much easier to tinker with the month, the quarter, or the year. But to make decisions with an eye to the distant future is much more difficult. Such decisions may indeed cost us in the short term. It may cost us money or our jobs. It takes the courage to lead, to operate to a standard that is higher than the law, to a standard of ethics. And when we are pressured to do things that violate that ethical code, it takes the courage to lead to speak up, to make those who would pressure us to do otherwise aware of the situation they are creating. And it takes courage to offer our help so they may fix it. It takes the courage to lead to make decisions counter to the current standards of business, and it takes the courage to lead to ignore the pressure of outside parties who are not invested in or believers in our just cause. Courage in the infinite game is not solely about the actions we take. Even leaders who operate with a finite mindset can take risks. Courage, as it relates to leading with an infinite mindset, is the willingness to completely change our perception of how the world works. It is the courage to reject Milton Friedman's stated purpose of business and embrace an alternative definition. When we have the courage to change our mindset from a finite view to a more infinite view, many of the decisions we make, like CVS's choice to stop selling cigarettes, seem bold to those with a more traditional view of the world. To those who now see the world through an infinite lens, however, such a decision is, dare I say it, obvious. So how are we to find the courage to change our mindset? Well, we can wait for a life-altering experience that shakes us to our core and challenges the way we see the world, or we can find a just cause that inspires us, surround ourselves with others with whom we share common cause, people we trust and who trust us, identify a rival worthy of comparison that will push us to constantly improve, and remind ourselves that we are more committed to the cause than to any particular path or strategy we happen to be following right now. The first method is completely legitimate, and indeed is the way so many of our great leaders came to be infinite-minded. Be it tragedy, opportunity, or divine intervention, something pushed them, sometimes quite suddenly, to see the world in an entirely new way. This method is, however, a bit of a gamble. I would not recommend that we simply go about our days waiting for this to happen. The second method offers us a little more control. All that is required is a little faith, a little discipline, and the willingness to practice. For many, that conversion can feel profound. Beyond how it feels, however, such a mind shift does indeed affect the decisions and actions we take. To those who see the world through a finite lens, our actions may seem idealistic, naive, or stupid. To those who believe what we believe, our actions will seem courageous. To the infinite-minded players out there, those courageous choices become the only options available. The power of purpose. She told me I couldn't let our airline fail because of the dramatic impact it would have on her life as a single working mom, he remembers. Doug Parker was named the new CEO of America West Airlines on September 1, 2001. 10 days later, the events of September 11 unfolded. Though many businesses suffered, the impact on the airline industry was especially hard. U.S. passenger loads declined over the following 2 years to a level that hadn't been seen since World War II. Companies like United and U.S. Airways filed for bankruptcy protection. And for a smaller, regional airline like America West, who didn't have the kind of revenue cushion the bigger airlines had, it looked like the company was going to completely collapse. Parker was one of the first to apply for a government loan from the newly formed Air Transportation Stabilization Board, ATSB, which offered $10 billion in loans to the airline industry after September 11. But the meeting didn't go well. Flying home on an America West flight, Parker felt dejected. It didn't look good, he recalls. As the newly minted CEO of America West, I was going to have the shortest, least successful CEO career in history. To take a break from thinking about the day, he decided to go to the galley to talk to the flight attendants. And that's when he met Mary. An outstanding flight attendant, Mary's job meant everything to her. It was no fault of hers that she worked for an airline without the strength to survive the industry shakeout. The only hope she had to avoid a serious personal crisis, Parker recounts, was for the people she worked for to figure out how to keep her company afloat. Before meeting Mary, avoiding collapse was a business matter for Parker. It was about figuring out the numbers to keep the company in business. It was only about managing the resources. After meeting Mary, it became a personal mission. It was about will, too. That commitment to a purpose bigger than ourselves drove us to accomplish things we likely would not have been able to if we were simply working on our own account, Parker explained. With newfound passion, the new CEO and his team fought for and received the government loan that had seemed impossible to get on the flight home. Looking to further strengthen the company and get a more competitive route network, Parker led America West into a merger with U.S. Airways in 2005 and with American Airlines in 2013. At that point, the mission was accomplished, says Parker with pride. American is the largest airline in the world. Our team was finally safe. But something still felt off for Parker. By early 2016, I found myself questioning my purpose for working, he said. We had delivered on a purpose bigger than ourselves, and I was still showing up to work, but it didn't feel very fulfilling. Was I just working for money? He remembers asking himself. For prestige? I sure didn't like the thought of answering either of those questions in the affirmative. Parker started to ask himself if he should leave the company, move on to do something that could better fulfill my desire to work for a cause bigger than myself, as he put it. This is so common among highly successful people. After they finish their careers, they go on to start foundations or distribute their wealth to charity, working to fulfill a desire to give back, to do something more philanthropic. But purpose is not something we only find after a successful career. Parker's drive to serve Mary and her colleagues, though incredibly inspiring, was framed as a moonshot. It had an endpoint, and once completed, Parker was left searching again. He had tasted what it felt like to be driven by something bigger than himself. It ignited a passion in him to drive the company to succeed like never before, not for his own glory, but for others, and he wanted that feeling again. Parker heard a talk given by Bob Chapman, the CEO of the manufacturing company Barry Waymiller. Chapman, about whom I wrote extensively in Leaders Eat Last, is an outspoken voice for the idea that the best leaders and the best companies prioritize people before numbers, that his company consistently thrives beyond expectations, with a people-before-profit philosophy, earns him invitations to speak to the converted and skeptics alike. It was at one of those talks that Parker was struck with a clear realization. He recognized the moonshot, but he hadn't yet recognized the context for the moonshot. Working to give people job security and higher pay may be an essential milestone on his journey, but it wasn't the just cause that could inspire him for the rest of his life. We needed to create an environment that cared for them, Parker said, where they were recognized and appreciated for their great work, where their leaders cared about them, and where they went home at the end of the day feeling fulfilled. That was the new mission, bigger than myself, I'd been looking for, Parker says excitedly about his new infinite pursuit. So what happens when the CEO of the largest airline in the world has the courage to change how he leads, to move from a finite to an infinite mindset? Like so many companies that prioritize numbers before people, American Airlines had a history of trust issues with employees. Long before Doug Parker showed up, the previous leadership team had negotiated significant concessions from the unions in the name of helping the company manage bankruptcy protection, while at the same time, guarantees were made to the top seven executives that they would receive bonuses worth double their salaries simply to stick around for a few more years. As if that wasn't bad enough, $41 million was put aside to protect the pensions of the top 45 executives, and no such provisions were made for rank-and-file employees. The scandal ultimately resulted in the resignation of then-CEO Donald Carty. In his departing statement, he expressed hope that his successors would try to build, quote, a new culture of collaboration, cooperation, and trust. Something that, despite public assurances, his successors, Gerard Arpey and Tom Horton, were unable to do. And the trust violations and possible ethical fading persisted. Unless a new leadership team was willing to make some hard choices and some sacrifices to demonstrate that they were indeed worthy of trust, nothing was going to change. Parker understood that grand pronouncements of how things were going to be different would do little to move the needle. He knew he and his leadership team needed to find the courage to demonstrate that things were, in fact, going to be different. And that's exactly what they did. Their first significant act happened in 2015, when they negotiated new contracts for their pilots and flight attendants that would make them some of the best paid in the industry. A year later, however, Delta and United signed new pilot and flight attendant contracts of their own, leapfrogging American by 5% for flight attendants and 8% for pilots. With the culture of cynicism still alive and well, many believed, falsely, that leadership knew this would happen and worked to hurry up and lock them into the lower contracts for the next 5 years. Saying you trust people is just words, says Parker. To validate the trust, we have to act in a way that lives up to the words. A lot of other executive teams would simply shrug and promise to deal with it at the next contract negotiation. Isn't that the purpose of a contract, they may say? However, trust is not built by pressure or force. Trust is built by acting in a way consistent with one's values, especially when it's least expected. Trust is built when we do the right thing, especially when we aren't forced to. And seeing their employees left behind industry averages for 3 or 4 more years just didn't feel right for the new American, and it doesn't feel consistent with our commitment, according to a joint statement issued by Parker and company president Robert Isom. The senior executives decided to give all their flight attendants and all their pilots a mid-contract raise of 5% and 8% respectively, and asked for nothing in return. The decision would cost the company over $900 million over the next 3 years. It was a decision they knew Wall Street would hate, and they were right. On April 27th, 2017, when American made the announcement, Wall Street's reactions were predictably disapproving. One analyst, Kevin Crissey, who specializes in the airline industry for Citi, wrote to his clients, "This is frustrating. Labor is being paid first again. Shareholders get leftovers." A letter from a group of J.P. Morgan analysts echoed the sentiment. "We are troubled by American's wealth transfer of nearly $1 billion to its labor groups," said the opening line of the letter. "We're sensitive to Americans' desire to build a foundation of trust with its labor stakeholders," the letter later explained. "But we think this latest agreement goes too far. The solution to a rising wage bar is not to chase it, in our view. Sometimes the timing of one's commitments is simply fortuitous." By fortuitous, I believe they were saying possibly unfair, but in our favor. Fortunately, the leaders at American Airlines had the courage to make a decision to strengthen their company without considering Mr. Crissy's and the J.P. Morgan team's annual bonus structures. Sadly, it is finite mindsets of those like Mr. Crissy and the analysts at J.P. Morgan who help sway the market. American predicted they would lose as much as 5% of their stock value. The day after the announcement, the stock price actually lost 9% of its value. The good news is, short-term thinking often has short-term impact. In less than 2 weeks, the stock regained its full original value, and by year-end was over 20% higher. Even so, many on Wall Street argue that American would have been more profitable if it hadn't given its employees raises, once again demonstrating their bias for resources over will. Finite thinkers do not appreciate that an investment in people will ultimately benefit the company, the customer, and their investments. And they probably also fail to recognize that it was their guidance that pushed the stock price down in the first place. A CEO of a major public company pointed out to me that Wall Street analysts tend to write for the short-term community, so they tend to write things that promote their interests, finite objectives. Responding to a question about all that short-term analyst chatter, Parker admitted that it is hard to completely ignore. "We have to work on it. We can quickly get sucked into it," he said. The good news is, Parker, his team, and the board of directors are working hard to be less reactive to the noise and to stay focused on the long term. "We need to care for our team so that they can care for our customers," said Parker. "That's how we will create value for our shareholders." American Airlines is still in the early days of their new journey, but because they are now preaching more of a long-term story than in the past, they are, unsurprisingly, attracting the attention of more long-term-minded investors, the kinds of investors who care less about the short-term fluctuations. One of those investors is Ted Weschler. Weschler is one of four investment managers who run Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, a company well known for their long-term positions. They rarely sell off their investments. As it turns out, long-term shareholders like Berkshire Hathaway have their own analysts and tend not to be swayed by the 24-hour financial news cycle. Buffett, the Oracle of Omaha, one of the most successful investors in history, one of the richest men in the world, revered in financial circles worldwide, once wrote that airlines were one of the worst investments someone could make. As he explained in a 2007 Berkshire Hathaway shareholder letter, "The worst sort of business is one that grows rapidly, requires significant capital to engender the growth, and then earns little or no money. Think airlines. Here, a durable competitive advantage has proven elusive ever since the days of the Wright brothers. Indeed, if a far-sighted capitalist had been present at Kitty Hawk, he would have done his successors a huge favor by shooting Orville down." It's worth noting that at the time of the publication of this book, Berkshire Hathaway is the single largest shareholder of American Airlines. And when Doug Parker informed them of his intention to give the mid-contract raise to his flight attendants and pilots, Weschler gave Parker his blessing. The joke is, all those finite thinkers who complain about Parker's leadership perspective will probably still invest in American if they think they can make a buck. It takes no courage to keep a finite mindset. CVS decided to use their just cause to guide their business, and they were the first to take the risk to remove cigarettes from their stores. This should make it easier for others to follow their lead. However, as of the writing of this book, its two biggest competitors, Walgreens and Rite Aid, continue to stock cigarettes on their shelves. I wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt. Even though they are both pharmacies, perhaps Walgreens and Rite Aid chose to stay the course because they have a different cause than CVS. Perhaps their decisions are indeed consistent with their stated purposes. So I checked to be sure. On the About Us section of the Walgreens Boots Alliance website, the company that owns Walgreens pharmacies, it states that its purpose is to help people across the world lead healthier and happier lives. After which it states, "Walgreens Boots Alliance takes seriously its aim of inspiring a healthier and happier world, as reflected in our core values, of which the first is trust. As they define it, respect, integrity, and candor guide our actions to do the right thing. When asked if they plan to follow CVS's lead, Walgreens released a statement that included their, quote, active decision to reduce space and visibility of tobacco products in certain of our stores as we focus on helping customers who want to stop smoking. Bold, Walgreens, bold. Executive chairman of Walgreens Boots Alliance, James Skinner, responded to the same question by stating, "We've reviewed this on a regular basis, and it's always up for a review decision down the road." Isn't that the opposite of courage or conviction? What exactly is Mr. Skinner afraid will happen if he makes a decision consistent with the company's actual stated purpose? According to the Centers for Disease Control, smoking is the leading preventable cause of death in the United States. The number of people who die from smoking-related illness each year is greater than all the people who die from HIV, illegal drug use, alcohol use, car accidents, and firearm-related incidents combined. Cigarettes kill 480,000 people every single year. That's 80,000 more people than the total number of American servicemen who died in all of World War II. The economic costs are also exorbitant. All those smoking-related illnesses cost American taxpayers more than $300 billion each year. The entire cost of NASA's space shuttle program, which includes building 6 space shuttles, 5 of which flew to space, cost taxpayers $196 billion over the course of more than 30 years, an average of $6.5 billion per year. The annual health care total related to smoking costs the country nearly 50 times more than traveling to space. If an oil company is held responsible for the costs associated with an oil spill or even a leaky pipeline, if a car company is held responsible when defects in a car's design causes injury, then shouldn't tobacco companies and the stores that sell their products be held responsible for the $300 billion annual cost? Remember those errors in causal perception in the ethical fading section? Of course a pharmacy devoted to helping people be healthy that sells a highly addictive and cancer-causing product like cigarettes bears some responsibility for the ill health they cause their customers, yes? The single best way to prevent all the deaths and reclaim all the money we lose to smoking-related illness is to help smokers stop smoking, something most smokers want to do. Nearly 70% of all smokers, many of whom shop at pharmacies, report a desire to quit. But it's not easy, and obviously many struggle to do so, which is why offering them an anti-smoking program next to the cigarettes isn't much help. That's a little like selling donuts next to diet books. The choice facing the consumer is between one item that satisfies a craving and is bought on impulse, and another that requires discipline and hard work. Anyone who actually wanted to help would try to make the harder choice a little easier by fully removing the thing that drives the impulse. Even if there is a cost to doing so, that's what the courage to lead is. If leaders of organizations go so far as to state a just cause or purpose for their organization, then it's kind of necessary that they must actually believe in that cause. The whole point of having a statement of cause or purpose is that they actually believe it. That they really believe the purpose of business is bigger than making money. A cause can only advance if they do the things that help advance it. If they don't, what's the point of having a cause written on the wall or on the website in the first place? More and more people say they want to work for a purpose-driven organization, especially millennials and Gen Zers. But without committed, infinite-minded leaders willing to challenge accepted norms of how the working world works, statements of cause are just feel-good marketing. Stuff a company may say to curry favor with people inside or outside the organization, but may not actually believe in or do themselves. Perhaps the pressure to make their numbers is acting on business leaders like the seminary students at Princeton. If the leaders of companies have no real interest adopting an infinite mindset, or at least being open to the idea that maybe they don't have everything figured out, they can at least have the courage to say what their true intentions are and delete from their websites and marketing what appear to be hollow statements of purpose or cause. Being honest about their short-term intentions would be, as Walgreens explains in its values, operating with integrity in order to build trust. But alas, that too takes courage. After the CVS announcement, Rite Aid, the third of the big three pharmacy chains in America, responded to the same question about whether it would follow suit. After all, doing so would also be consistent with its stated purpose. The first sentence of the Our Story section of the pharmacy website reads, "At Rite Aid, we have a personal interest in your health and wellness. That's why we deliver the products and services that you, our valued customer, need to lead a healthier, happier life." Yet, when asked whether they plan to follow CVS's lead and stop selling cigarettes in their stores, the company released a statement that Milton Friedman himself could have written. Rite Aid offers a wide range of products, including tobacco products, which are available for purchase in accordance with federal, state, and local laws. Think about that for a moment. When a company responds to an ethical question or defends an unethical decision by explaining that they can legally do what they are doing, that's like someone who has been caught cheating by their long-term boyfriend or girlfriend replying, "What? We're not married. I broke no laws. I'm legally allowed to sleep with someone else if I want." Their actions may indeed be legal, but it's hardly the kind of response that engenders or rebuilds trust. When companies and the people who lead them act with courage and integrity, when they demonstrate that they are honest and of strong character, they are often rewarded with goodwill and trust from customers and employees. The day after CVS made the announcement that it would be pulling cigarettes from its stores, the phone rang on Mary Alice Sayans's desk. It was her mother. Almost in tears, she told Mary Alice how proud she was that her daughter worked for a company like CVS. For years, Mary Alice's father's smoking habit had been a source of family conflict. "That was a really gutsy move," explained Mary Alice. "I was really proud to come to work that day. And I think out of everything," she continued, "that was the day where I sat back and I thought, I am absolutely in the right place." I think it's safe to say that neither employees nor customers get the same warm and fuzzy feelings when a company obeys the law. The courage to see the infinite game, to see the purpose of business as something more heroic than simply making money, even if it's unpopular with the finite players around us, is hard. True courage to lead holds the company and its leadership to a much higher standard than simply acting within the bounds of the law. Only when organizations operate on a higher level than federal, state, and local laws can we say they have integrity, which incidentally is the actual definition of integrity: firm adherence to a code of especially moral or artistic values, incorruptibility. Indeed, the pursuit of a just cause is a path of integrity. It means that words and actions must align. It also means that there will be times when leadership must choose to ignore all the voices calling for the company to serve the interests of those who don't necessarily believe in the cause at all. Integrity does not just mean doing the right thing. Integrity means acting before the public outcry or scandal. When leaders know about something that is unethical and only act after the outcry, that's not integrity, that's damage control. "They wait for public opinion to tell them what to do," says Rosabeth Moss Kanter, a professor at Harvard Business School, when talking about how CEOs make decisions today. CEO courage is in short supply. Splits and crossroads. Human beings are messy and imperfect. There is no such thing as a perfectly infinite-minded leader, and there is certainly no such thing as a perfectly infinite-minded organization. In reality, even the most infinitely focused companies can stray onto a finite path. And when that happens, it takes the courage to lead to recognize that the organization has strayed from its cause, and it takes courage of leadership to get back on course. This is sadly common once an organization has achieved great success. Whereas the infinite-minded player sees that they are still at the tip of the iceberg, no matter how much traditional success they enjoy, the finite player will often transition into playing defense to guard their pole position. It takes courageous leadership to stay in the infinite game after you arrive at the top. To recognize that regardless of how much success has been achieved, the cause is infinite. Unfortunately, the temptation to convert to finite is so, so tempting. There was a period, for example, when the Disney Corporation strayed from its infinite cause to chase more finite pursuits, like global domination, enhanced shareholder value, and the enrichment of those who chose to enable it. In 1993, Disney bought Miramax Films, which went on to produce such family-friendly movies as Quentin Tarantino's crime flick Pulp Fiction, Danny Boyle's black comedy about Scottish heroin addicts Trainspotting, and a re-released edit of Francis Ford Coppola's surreal ride into the Vietnam War, Apocalypse Now Redux. Under Disney's recording label, Hollywood Records, we were able to enjoy such family-friendly acts as the hardcore punk band Suicide Machines and heavy metal band World War III. Whenever a new CEO takes over, that new leader will stand at a crossroads. How will they lead? When Mike Duke and Steve Ballmer took the helms at Walmart and Microsoft, respectively, both made the choice to lead their companies down a finite path. Had the companies stayed on these paths, they may have been forced to drop out of the game altogether. The CEOs who replaced them, Doug McMillon at Walmart and Satya Nadella at Microsoft, also made a choice to do what they needed to do to put their respective companies back on the infinite path. And though they still face many challenges, both seem genuinely committed to leading a cause, not just running a company. Major events, like an IPO or a change in leadership, can force an organization to choose one path over the other two. However, there need not be a specific event to cause an organization to veer from the infinite path to a finite one. Such veerings or splits off the infinite path are actually quite normal. People stray from their own paths all the time. We often stray from a healthy routine or fall off other healthy bandwagons. As companies are run by people, it would be expected that these things will happen. What causes an organization to stray off course is often quite consistent. It occurs when leaders become more interested in their own finite pursuits than the infinite game, and drag the organization along with them. Organizations will also find themselves at a crossroads when their leaders start to believe their own myths, that the success the company enjoyed under their leadership was a result of their genius rather than the genius of their people who were inspired by the cause they were leading. These leaders too often fixate on advancing their own fame, fortunes, glory, and legacies at the expense of the company and its cause. Management becomes disconnected from the people, and trust breaks down. And when performance necessarily starts to suffer as a result, these same leaders are quicker to blame others than to look at what set the company on the new path in the first place. In order to fix the problem, their faith in the people is replaced with faith in the process. The company becomes more rigid, and decision-making powers are often taken away from the front lines. It can't be a good thing when the captain of the ship, who is supposed to be on deck navigating towards the horizon, is now in the ship tinkering with the engine trying to make it go faster. Facebook was an infinite player that now seems to be moving down a more finite path. Founded in 2004, Facebook came to life with a well-articulated cause: to give people the power to build community and bring the world closer together. Today, however, it finds itself embroiled in scandals that do anything but bring the world closer together. Facebook has been accused of violating their users' privacy, tracking our habits online even when we're not on Facebook, failing to adequately police fake accounts or fake news disseminated across their service, then using all the data they collect either to sell or to maximize the dollars they earn from selling advertising. I doubt this is what Mark Zuckerberg meant by giving people power. Has Facebook veered from their once inspiring infinite path because of the overwhelming pressure their leaders feel to answer to Wall Street's finite expectations? Is it because they are doubling down on a business model driven by selling advertising instead of making an existential flex to reshape the entire company? Is it because their leaders have lost connection with their just cause and who they need to be primarily serving in order to keep the game in play? Is it hubris? Today, when Facebook does right by the people, it is too often a result of public pressure or scandal, and rarely a proactive decision made to protect those they serve and advance their cause. Facebook reacted to the scandal that erupted around Cambridge Analytica, for example, only after there was a scandal, even though they were aware of Cambridge Analytica's unethical practices before we found out about it. Regardless of what combination of things led Facebook down this path, there is no getting around the fact that they are acting with a more finite mindset than in the past. Being big and rich does not mean the company can't fail. Though money certainly helps delay the inevitable in this never-ending game, it also provides the runway for leaders to get things back on track. The only question is whether they will or not. With a little courage to lead, they can renew the trust of the people who helped champion their success before it's too late. As companies like Microsoft, Walmart, and Disney show, companies can afford to veer off course for a while. They will still face the challenge of finding their way back to the infinite path that they once all started down. Though some can bear the cost of splitting for longer, money eventually runs out. Not every organization can afford to veer off the infinite path for as long. Regardless of the size of the company, the elements of the infinite-minded leadership that I've tried to make a case for in this book are the best way to help stay on that infinite journey. Playing the infinite game is not a checklist, it's a mindset. How to find the courage to lead. In my life, the only common factor in all my failed relationships is me. The common factor in all the struggles and setbacks that finite-minded leaders face is their own finite thinking. To admit that takes courage. To work to open one's mind to a new worldview takes even more courage, especially when we know many of our choices will go badly. To actually take steps to apply an infinite mindset to an organization's culture can seem to many like it would take insurmountable courage. And the truth is, it does. For it can be embarrassing, even humiliating, to admit that we are part of the problem. It can also be empowering and inspiring to decide to be a part of the solution. Few, if any of us, have the courage to change from a finite mindset to a more infinite one alone. We must find others who share our sense of responsibility, who share our beliefs that it is time to change, and who share our desire to work together to do it. In every case that I wrote about to demonstrate the courage to lead, the hard decisions were not made by great women and great men. They were done by great partnerships, great teams, great people who stood together with a deep trust in common cause. Like a world-famous trapeze artist would never attempt a brand new death-defying act for the first time without a net, neither can we find the courage to lead without the help of others. Those who believe what we believe are our net. Courageous leaders are strong because they know they don't have all the answers. They don't have total control. They do, however, have each other and a just cause to guide them. It is the weak leader who takes the expedient route, the ones who think they have all the answers or try to control all the variables. It requires less strength to announce layoffs at the end of the year, to quickly squeeze the numbers to meet an arbitrary projection, than it does to explore other, maybe untested options. When leaders exercise the courage to lead, the people who work inside their organization will start to reflect that same courage. Like children who mirror their parents, so too do employees mirror their leaders. Leaders who prioritize themselves over the group breed cultures of employees who prioritize their own advancement over the health of the company. The courage to lead begets the courage to lead. Afterward. Our lives are finite, but life is infinite. We are the finite players in the infinite game of life. We come and go, we're born and we die, and life still continues with us or without us. There are other players, some of them are our rivals. We enjoy wins and we suffer losses, but we can always keep playing tomorrow, until we run out of the ability to stay in the game. And no matter how much money we make, no matter how much power we accumulate, no matter how many promotions we are given, none of us will ever be declared the winner of life. In any other game, we get two choices. Though we do not get to choose the rules of the game, we do get to choose if we want to play, and we get to choose how we want to play. The game of life is a little different. In this game, we only get one choice. Once we are born, we are players. The only choice we get is if we want to play with a finite mindset or an infinite mindset. If we choose to live our lives with a finite mindset, it means we make our primary purpose to get richer or promoted faster than others. To live our lives with an infinite mindset means that we are driven to advance a cause bigger than ourselves. We see those who share our vision as partners in the cause, and we work to build trusting relationships with them so that we may advance the common good together. We are grateful for the success we enjoy, and as we advance, we work to help those around us rise. To live our lives with an infinite mindset is to live a life of service. Remember, in life, we are players in multiple infinite games. Our careers are just one. No one of us will ever be declared the winner of parenting, friendship, learning, or creativity either. However, we can choose the mindset with which we approach all these things. To take a finite approach to parenting means to do everything we can to ensure our kids not just get the best of everything, but are the best at everything. A seemingly fair standard, for all these things will help our kids excel in life, or so the thinking goes. Except when a finite mindset is the primary strategy, it can give way to ethical fading or push us to become more obsessed with our child's standing in the hierarchy over if they are actually learning or growing as a person. An extreme example is shared by clinical psychologist and New York Times bestselling author, Dr. Wendy Mogul. She tells the story of a father who raised his hand during a conference at which she was speaking to tell her that, quote, he had a fight with the pediatrician about his son's Apgar score, and I won. The Apgar score is a test performed within the first minute to 5 minutes of a child's birth to determine their strength. Basically, as Dr. Mogul explains, if they are blue and floppy, they get a 1. If they are pink and plump, they get a 5. Think about that for a second. This parent seemed more concerned with winning and getting his newborn child a higher score rather than concerning himself with his child's health. Flash forward 18 years and think about the lengths that parent might go to ensure his child gets the best scores to get into the best school, all the time ignoring if the child is actually learning or is healthy in every other way. To parent with an infinite mindset, in contrast, means helping our kids discover their talents, pointing them to find their own passions, and encouraging they take that path. It means teaching our kids the value of service, teaching them how to make friends, and how to play well with others. It means teaching our kids that their education will continue long after they graduate school. It will last their entire lives, and there may not be any curriculum or grades to guide them. It means teaching our kids how to live a life with an infinite mindset themselves. There is no single greater contribution in the infinite game than to raise children who will continue to grow and serve others long after we are gone. To live a life with an infinite mindset means thinking about the second and third order effects of our decisions. It means thinking about who we vote for with a different lens. It means taking responsibility for the later impact of the decisions we make today. And like all infinite games, in the game of life, the goal is not to win. It is to perpetuate the game, to live a life of service. None of us wants on our tombstones the last balance in our bank accounts. We want to be remembered for what we did for others. Devoted mother, loving father, loyal friend. To serve is good for the game. We only get one choice in the infinite game of life. Which will you choose? If this book inspired you, please pass it on to someone you want to inspire.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Infinite Game, written and read by Simon Sinek. This program was directed by Bruce Mann, executive producer Aaron Blank. Text copyright 2019 by Red Car LLC. Production copyright 2019, Penguin Random House LLC. All rights reserved.